I'd like to call the February 2nd board meeting to order and remind everyone to please mute your phone or your computer microphone when not speaking. In addition, if anyone other than a board member would like to speak, please use the raise hand feature and wait to be acknowledged by the board recorder. Thank you. Next thing we'll do is the roll call, and the board recorder will now conduct a roll call for the record.
All right, thank you. City of Beaverton, Commissioner Tivnan.
Here.
City of Hillsborough, Commissioner Judah.
Here.
TVWD, Commissioner Duggan.
Here.
Thank you. We have a quorum. This concludes roll call. All other attendees will be recorded using Microsoft Teams participant list.
All right, thank you. The next item for today's meeting, as it usually is Dave Kraska to present the General Manager's Report.
Thank you, Chair Judah, and good afternoon, Commissioners. So, as typically with what we do at these meetings, we start with a safety minute, so let's go ahead and get into that. Brief one today, it's talking about freezing the grease. So what do we mean by that? And frankly, I'm a little surprised that we need to like give these reminders, but evidently people are still pouring grease down their pipes. So let's go ahead and do this reminder that the grease from cooking may look harmless as a liquid, and it is generally, but when it cools and if you pour it down your drain, it gets thick and sticky. And it will lead to sticking to the pipe walls, clogging them up, and potentially plumbing overflows in your house. So don't do that. Instead, prevent the backups in the plumbing with proper grease disposal, which means take any grease from your cooking, put it in a can, freeze it, and then toss it in the trash. Simple as that. It's the right way to dispose of it. And this actually comes to us from our partners at Clean Water Services, and they actually have a kit that they offer to folks. And it includes a pan scraper, plastic lid, and instructions on how to properly dispose fats, oils, and greases so it doesn't end up in your pipes or in the sewer system or at their treatment plants. So please freeze the grease and save the drain. Moving on now back onto our General Manager's Report, starting off with a reminder or update to our possible move to hybrid meetings. So at the October 6th, 2022 Willamette Water Supply System Commission board meeting, staff provided an update on the possible move to hybrid meetings. TVWD is still in the process of acquiring the needed equipment to facilitate holding hybrid meetings in its boardroom. So accordingly, we recommend the April 23 meeting, the next one that we'll have, next scheduled meeting, to be held virtually. Once TVWD has successfully updated its boardroom to support hybrid meetings, we will inform this board at the following meeting and discuss the possibility of transitioning for virtual meetings to in-person meetings or hybrid board meetings. So long story short, TVWD is still in the process of working on this. When they're successful at it, I'll let you know, and we'll discuss if we want to pivot to hybrid meetings or in-person meetings. Next up on the General Manager's Report is acceptance of the financial statements and the report of the independent auditor. On the consent agenda for today's meeting is the consideration of accepting by motion both financial statements for the fiscal year ended June 30, 2022, and the report of the independent auditor. As a managing agency, TVWD prepared the WWSS Commission's financial statements for the fiscal year ended June 30, 2022. Moss Adams, TVWD's independent auditor, has completed its audits of these financial statements. Moss Adams provided an unmodified opinion on the WWSS Commission's financial statements. An unmodified opinion is commonly referred to as a clean audit. Acceptance of the financial statements and the report of the independent auditor by this commission, this board, validates the filing of the financial statements with the Oregon Secretary of State as required by Oregon law. Next up is the quarterly financial report. Task 4D of the annual work plan requires a managing agency to prepare quarterly financial reports and provide them to the WIF Commission Board, or the WWSS Commission Board, sorry about that, as part of the packet. Attached to this General Manager's Report is the WWSS Commission's quarterly financial statements for the period ending December 31, 2022. Got to slow down here for a second. The Willamette Water Supply System Insurance Renewal is the next part of the General Manager's Report, and the 2023 renewal of the Special Districts Insurance Services Liability Coverage Insurance has been completed, and the new policy took effect on January 1, 2022, or 2023, actually. Apologize for that typo. There were minimal changes in coverage, and the premium was within budget at $7,518. Effective January 1, 2023, a social engineering sublimit of $250,000 was added to the policy to cover money stolen through fraud schemes. This new sublimit is due to continued increase in social engineering fraud claims locally and nationwide. In addition to having insurance for it, TVWD, as the managing agency for the WWSS Commission, will continue to guard against this risk through its operations controls and ongoing employee education. Moving on now to permitting and communications updates. The Willamette Water Supply Program permitting and efforts remain very active, and attached to this general manager's report is a tabulation of the permits and approvals recently granted and status of those currently in process. So regarding permitting highlights, the staff finalized the terms of the reimbursement agreement with BPA for the design and relocation of power lines within the Pipeline Main PLM 1.3 project. This is actually our project through central part of Wilsonville. Next up is the Washington County issued two more building permits for the reservoir projects, east valve and flow meter vaults this month. Two additional permits for the reservoir structure and the water quality buildings are currently under review by the county. And three final building permit applications are being prepared for submission for the engine generator platform, the light pole platform, and the permanent fence. WWSP staff recently met with the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality staff to tour the Wilsonville Area Pipeline Project in Wilsonville. The tour was requested by new DEQ 401 water quality certification specialist assigned to the program, provided an opportunity to educate the DEQ about the program, our erosion control protocols, and the effectiveness of those protocols after the recent winter rains. Regarding communications updates, WWSP staff recently held a Meet the Contractor event for the neighbors of Cornelius Pass Road, PLW 2.1 pipeline project, located in the northeast corner of Orenco Woods Nature Park and through the WWSS-owned property west of Cornelius Pass Road. The meeting began by introducing the construction team, which included staff from the general contractor, Moore Excavation, staff from the program, Metro City of Hillsborough Water and Parks, City of Hillsborough Water and Parks and Recreations Departments provided information about the project timeline and wildlife protection measures. Presentation also include efforts to create additional wildlife habitat in the Orenco Woods Nature Park and at Jackson Bottom Wetland using trees and brush removed during pipeline installation. Vegetation clearing work begins later this month in advance of the bird nesting season. And in fact, I believe that clearing work is now complete. Finally, construction and operations readiness status updates. Attached to this general manager's report is a tabulation of the status of all active construction projects. To provide a more complete understanding of the work underway, we will share a presentation of recent photos from these construction sites and the status of our efforts to prepare for our operations. A copy of this presentation is attached to this general manager's report. So before I move into that presentation, any questions about that part of the general manager's report?
People are shaking their heads no, it looks like. Dave, I have one. Can you, the term social engineering fraud was a new term for me. Can you elaborate on that just a little bit?
Yeah, honestly, it was to me too. And so I had to look it up, and essentially what it is it's the, like those phishing schemes, where you'll get an email from your long lost relative saying they need money right away, or somebody that's spoofing an email address, claiming to be somebody that they're not. And so in my general manager's report, I talked about money lost in these schemes. So essentially the way it works is the, let's say somebody in accounts payable processing or something or other, if they aren't paying attention, they may be subject to a scheme like this and be told to redirect a payment to another party that is fraudulent. And so it's those types of schemes that are occurring, and that's what's typically called, that's what they mean by social engineering, if that makes sense.
All right, thank you. That example helped clear it up for me perfectly. I have no other questions.
Okay, great. All right, let's get into the PowerPoint of all the construction projects that we have going on. And so in these reports, as you gathered from my general manager's report, I've got two parts to these reports now. The first part will be all of our construction projects going on. I'll show you some photos of the status and where they're at. And then the second part, I'll talk about what we're doing to get ready for operations. I'll cover that later on in this presentation, but let's go ahead and get into the construction aspects of it first. So next up is, as a reminder, we have 14 active construction projects all over the county going on right now, all listed here. I'll talk about every single one of them as we go through. Starting at the south, in the raw water facilities project, a lot going on there as usual. Right now we're working on GMP number 2. So this is actually the third guaranteed maximum price work effort. There was GMP 1, which was complete. That was all of our underground work. Then GMP 1.5. That was some work that we accomplished last summer to get some underground work done before the rains. And now we're working on the final GMP, GMP number 2. And so in that, we've completed our lower side drainage improvements, curb and railing. We also, as I mentioned, completed all the GMP number 1.5 work. And regarding GMP number 2 work that has commenced, the electrical subcontractors are fully mobilized. We're processing submittals, preparing the piles and subgrade for the slab, for slab at the electrical building, and under slab electrical conduits going to be installing soon. So the first photo that I have for you on this project is of the upper site, and there it is. So what we're showing here is the upper site facility, and what the difference is from the last photos that I showed you on this project is the paving. And so the paving around the building and the other facilities that we're going to be building there, which is the electrical building, standby generators, and also the surge control facilities, that's that kind of tan area inside of all of the paving area. So basically, since we've paved the site, that means all of our underground work is complete there. So now we're going to start going vertical on this particular site. Look real closely in that dirt area. You see all those dots there? And that's all the foundation piles that were installed a year or more ago. And so we'll be attaching our foundation to that and going vertical from there. So the next photo, I believe, is of the park, and basically just showing that we are complete with all of our work in the park. So all of the underground work that we were installing there adjacent to the water treatment plant is complete. The park is complete. Ongoing maintenance on the park and repair in some areas, but it's otherwise open to the public. So that work is now done. Similarly, our work on the rest of the lower site there, out towards the river, is complete. Our restoration of the river overlook, the pathway down to the river, is complete. And I encourage you, if you get a chance and you're out there, go take a look. It's really a much improved site down there right now. We are not done with all of our work there. What's to come is we will be installing our pumps in the raw water pump building and our mechanical equipment and some electrical equipment there. But all of the structural work and underground work is complete. So moving on now to PLM 1.3. As I mentioned, that's our pipeline project through the rest of Wilsonville. Just getting started with our construction activity there. We've got our staging area preparation and mobilization to begin the construction work. We're doing some pavement saw cutting along the pipeline alignment, tree protection and fencing and tree removal in some areas, temporary driveway construction, and so we're going to be starting our open cut work. It says late January, but I think it's actually going to be in February that we're actually get started on that work. Next slide. And so I think the only slide that I have to show you here, the only photo that I have of this project, because again, we're just beginning construction, is saw cutting along 95th Avenue. And like a lot of the roads in Wilsonville, it's a concrete panel. And so we have to cut through it very carefully. And there we go. And I think Andre liked putting this photo in there because there's a rainbow in it. So he says whenever he has a photo with a rainbow in it, he's got to add that to the slide deck. So there it is. Everyone likes rainbows. So that's pretty much it for PLM 1.3. Now we'll move up north to the water treatment plant project. And this is going to remain probably our most active project for the next few years. Continuing our mass excavation and grading, temporary electrical duct banks, concrete placements are beginning now in area 30 and 53. I've got a photo of that. Continuing our setup of the staging area and warehouse area out by the trailers. and a lot of paperwork and behind the scenes work with submittals and building information management modeling. Next slide. And so this shows, at the top of the photo is Southwest 124th Avenue. And out the kind of the left-hand side there is our access to this site. In the center there, the circular figure there is our clear well, and the little rectangle there to the right of it is the base of the finished water pump station. So what you see there, you can't really see it without the clarity there, but all of the rebar is installed in that foundation for the finished water pump station, that rectangular surface there. And the concrete has been poured for that base. So it was about a 500 cubic yard pour, very large pour, and it went very successfully. And so they're making good progress on this project with the rebar installation and concrete pours getting started. They're making good progress. Next photo I have is an aerial showing you the kind of the overall site. Oh, yes, Commissioner Judah, did you have a question?
You were too quick for me. The JWC about 2 years ago experienced a big issue with concrete pours, particularly a large one out at the water treatment facility that had to be taken apart and redone. Do we have any of those types of things going on here where temperature sensitivity and those types of things that play into the curing and performance of the type of concrete that we're using?
I wouldn't. So I'd say there's always a risk, and the risks of what occurred at JWC are made greater by the thickness of the concrete pour, just how deep the concrete pour is, and the temperature, the ambient temperature. My understanding of the problems with the Joint Water Commission project was it was a very thick pour. I can't remember how many feet thick, but it was a very, very thick pour, and it was done during hot temperatures. And so it's difficult to manage the curing temperature of the concrete. Since we're doing these pours in cold weather, and also we don't have the same thickness in the foundations that you have at the Joint Water Commission, largely because we're building this treatment plant on rock. And so our foundations are going to be much more thinner, much more shallow than they are at the JWC treatment plant that has a geology that's very loose. And so I'd say the risks of that occurring on this project are much less than what they were at the JWC project, but it's not something we're going to take for granted. We're certainly going to be managing the curing temperature of the concrete. Everything's in our specs to guard against that, because we certainly don't want a repeat of that episode.
All right, thanks. That's a great answer. My memory says the JWC thing, we didn't realize there was an issue till, I don't want to use the term after the fact, but for quite a while after the concrete had been poured, because of the way the reporting status and all of that worked. Do we have a better situation here where we can know right away as opposed to a couple months later? I just made those timelines up. I don't know how fast it's supposed to work.
Yeah, I'm sure if I had Mike Bridge or Andre on the call here, they'd be able to explain what it is that we're doing differently on this project than was done at the JWC project. I think it has to do with monitoring and managing the temperature of the concrete cure, and I don't remember the details, but I know that we are taking a lot more measurements of the concrete curing temperatures as it's going along, which is what you really want to guard against with those types of concrete pours.
All right, great, thank you.
You're welcome. Good questions. Okay, so again, this is our drone shot of the, this is probably on the order of about a month old, looking at our overall water treatment plant site. At the bottom left corner there is that reservoir that we were just looking at, the clear well. The bottom square figure there on the bottom right is our equalization basin, and then everything looking to the south there is the rest of the treatment plant with our trailers and staging area in the distance there. If we go to the next slide, basically we fly the drone south and now look north, and now we're over that the trailer area and staging area where basically everybody stages there before getting to work on the site. And we just kind of get an overall view of the site in construction. Very active site, but things are going well. Next slide. Now we move back to our pipeline projects for a little bit. We have our PLM 4.2 project just to the north of our treatment plant site in Tualatin and Sherwood Road. This again is a partner project with Washington County. Washington County is still doing all the road widening work before we can begin our pipeline work. So it's road widening, retaining walls, utility relocations, and our part is basically just submittals, just paperwork in preparation for the pipeline work to come. So along with that, pretty much the only photo that I have to show of you is for you is road widening. So this shows you a portion of Tualatin and Sherwood Road. The kind of white feature toward the bottom of the photo is the new retaining wall that was constructed to widen Tualatin and Sherwood Road to add the lanes that are needed so that they can move the traffic over and we can get to started on our pipeline work. Anyways, that project's going well, but it's mostly Washington County work at this time. Next slide. Now we move up to PLM 4.1. That's just a little bit further west on Tualatin and Sherwood Road, crossing Highway 99. On that one, we've completed our crossing of Highway 99, which was a trenchless crossing. We've installed all of the 66-inch water line on the other side of 99, the northwest side of 99. And so that's complete. We're installing the pipe on the other side of 99 on Tualatin and Sherwood Road. And again, continuing Washington County's road widening work, because again, this is another partner project with Washington County. So with this one, I've got a couple of photos to show you. So this shows you our crossing at Tualatin and Sherwood Road, Langer Farms Parkway. You can see that Tualatin and Sherwood Road is running top to bottom vertically through this photo, and Langer Farms is running left to right. And you can see our pipeline work being staged there at the bottom of the photo to eventually get across Langer Farms there to the other side, and a lot of more pipelines staged on the other side. They're making great progress on this one. It's moving along very well. Next slide. And this one basically just turns around the drone and looks more north now up towards 99. So again, the main feature in this photo is 12 and Sherwood Road looking up towards 99. And pretty much you can't see our pipeline work occurring, but on the bottom side of Tualatin and Sherwood Road, or the west side of Tualatin and Sherwood Road, you see the clearing area where our pipeline installation work is going to occur before they build the road over our pipeline work. So basically getting prepared for our pipeline installation work. Next slide. Now moving on to PLM 4.4, that's on the other side of Highway 99, getting the rest of the way out of Sherwood. Again, another partner project with Washington County. So this one's still in the paperwork phase for us, processing submittals and RFIs. And Washington County, the road work is installing more sound walls, or it's nearing completion on that work. Storm drain improvements, curbs to be installed, and then pipeline installation to be started later on in the spring. So I think pretty much the only photos I have here to show you is sound wall installation. So basically, this is the work that Washington County needed to complete in preparation for our pipeline work, much like PLM 4.2 that I just talked about. But it's going along very smoothly. Next slide. Now we're out of Sherwood up to the north, PLM 4.3, the rest of the way down Roy Rogers Road up to past Beef Bend Road. This one is more construction of hauling and access roads for waterline construction. The exciting part here is that we are just beginning the microtunneling work, which is about a 2,000-foot microtunnel across the Tualatin River. Definitely the longest trenchless effort on the Willamette Water Supply Program. And so we're just getting started on that. I believe they just launched the machine. And along with that, the contractor is at the same time it's still installing a lot of 66-inch pipe using open-cut methods up north of Beef Bend Road. So the next slide, I think we've got some photos of the trenchless work. And so this is the south shaft. So this is actually the shallower shaft on the south side of the Tualatin River where the microtunneling machine will be sent from. And I believe the next photo is of the microtunneling machine at the business end of it, and there it is. And so this is the business end of the microtunneling machine. I believe this is 84 inches in diameter, if I'm not mistaken. So it's a very large piece of equipment to be large enough to create the space needed for our casing shaft, our casing pipe, for our carrier pipe. But it shows, you can see the grinding teeth and the other feature of this that will allow it to get through all of the materials that we're expecting to occur from the sending shaft to the receiving shaft on the other side of the Tualatin River. Next slide. And as I mentioned, along with that, while they're doing the trenchless work, we're also installing our pipeline right along Roy Rogers Road. It's a pretty hectic part of the world right now. If you pretty much drive anywhere around Washington County these days, you're going to run into our work. And if you take a drive down Roy Rogers Road, there's a lot of activity that's all related to our pipeline installation. But the times that I've done it, traffic control is being managed very well, and it's going along very smoothly so far. Next slide. So now we'll move further north up to the RES 1.0 PLM 5.3 project. A lot of work going on there as usual. So on the RES project, we've completed the construction of our soil narrow rock bolt retaining wall behind that will stay behind the reservoirs. Completed the excavation of our 66-inch yard piping and valve vaults. Continued preparation of the water tank subgrade and underdrain piping for the east tank that we will be building. Continued the detention basin final subgrade and lining and mobilization for 66-inch butterfly valve vault and flow meter vault on the reservoir site itself. On the PLM 5.3, continued installation of the water line. We've installed so far about 9,000 linear feet of that pipe on this project, which is about 45%, so nearing halfway done with the pipeline installation on this project. Completed our ground improvement work, which was on the other side of Farmington Road, and continued our trenchless crossing of Farmington Road. Actually, in the preparation of these slides, at the time we were preparing them, it says continued the trenchless crossing. We're actually complete. We're actually all the way across Farmington Road, and that was uneventful. So it's always the best way for these trenchless projects to occur without incident. So next slide. So here's our recently current aerial of the reservoir site. So what you see here, it's so hard to tell at such a distance, but if you actually go to the site, it's really quite impressive. The retaining wall that develops the site, essentially, that we'll be building our reservoirs on. At its peak, it's about 30 feet tall, and it'll be there forever, basically to maintain a safe site, maintain the Stone Creek Drive there, and it's very well constructed. But anyway, so this shows the site's pretty well finally developed. They're prepared for the pipeline installation there, kind of on the right-hand side. And at the top there, you see that's the circular feature and also some kind of cuts in the bottom of that. So they're beginning to prepare for the underdrain installation of the underdrain piping below our reservoir. So everything's moving along very well in this project. But it is massive, massive work. So a little bit of a detail shot here, the detention pond. So they're just finishing up buttoning up the final work there, preparing the base of the detention pond for the liner that we talked about on an earlier slide. Next slide. A lot of pipeline work, as I mentioned, they're about halfway through it. So this is through more kind of the unincorporated areas of installing our 66-inch pipeline. It's a little hard to figure out where we're pointed, but essentially the drone is looking southeast, and so this is kind of over the just south of the Baker Rock activities and looking out towards where Gravelwood Road is. Our reservoir site is kind of over on the upper left-hand corner. Yep, thank you, Joelle, for pointing that out. Next slide. And so I mentioned the trenchless crossing under Farmington Road. This is one that was a little bit challenging. When they actually started doing the preparation for this work, creating the sending and receiving pits, they found that the material that they had to get through was much harder than anticipated. So we did have to make a change on this particular work, switching the equipment in order to effectively get across Farmington Road. But luckily, we have good professionals working on this that know how to make that happen, and they were successful in getting this work completed. So it is a change in the work, but it was necessary for the change conditions that we were responsible for there. But that's successfully completed. So Now moving on from PLM 5.3 up to PLW 1.2, that's in Corn Pass on the other side of TV Highway. Continuing, this again is another partnership project with Washington County. Continuing installing a 48-inch pipeline between Johnson Street and TV Highway in Corn Pass. Completed our Johnson Street crossing. I've got a couple of photos of that for you. We're going to be working on a Corneas Pass road crossing in March, so next month. And basically, we're installing the pipeline on one side of the road. Then at some point, we need to cross over to the other side. So that's why we're crossing Corn Pass. And Washington County is continuing their sound wall pilaster installation on this one, just like they're doing on down in Sherwood. Those photos I was showing you elsewhere. So this is on the kind of the south end of this particular project, looking north down Corn Pass, and it's really kind of hard to tell from this aerial what's going on. Kind of in the center of the photo, obviously, is Corn Pass, and on the right-hand side of the Corn Pass is our easement area, our temporary construction easement. So you can see some of our pipeline sticks there, and if you squint real hard, you can see some of our excavators working there. If you our next photo there zooms in quite a bit, and there it is. And so this is Corn Pass again, going north-south, top to bottom on this photo, and then Johnson Street going left to right. And so what we're showing here is basically just the construction activity getting across that intersection, getting across Johnson Street. And a couple of things to point out here, and this happens, I'd say, dozens of times on this particular project where we're installing pipelines all over Washington County, is we have to work really, really hard in this particular case with Washington County to get approval to shut down Johnson Street. And so the most economical, safest, fastest way to get across this intersection for us anyways was closing down Johnson Street, open cut, put our pipeline in, put the intersection back together and reopen Johnson Street. But getting approvals to do that was a heck of a lot of work and design, and convincing Washington County that frankly was in their best interest as well to allow us to open cut and install through there. But this is just, it's, so when you see construction like this, it's kind of fascinating to watch the construction, but I'm just recalling all the heavy lifting that took place on the design team and the permitting team and the communications team and everything to get approvals to do this. And now here's the fruits of our labor. It's we're across Johnson Street and it's reopened. Yes, Councillor Tivnan.
Yeah, that's interesting that you had to fight for that, and I'm curious if you anticipate needing to close any other intersections, and if there are lessons learned from this, or if this is kind of a one-time thing.
Definitely not a one-time thing. Thank you for your question. I off the top of my head, I can't think of what other intersections we're closing, but I know we are closing others. Like in one of the earlier photos, I think it was PLM 4.2 or 4.1. It was 4.1. We were going across Langer Farms, and that was a really tricky one where Washington County and Sherwood allowed us to open cut through there, but only want us to open cut part of the way and build and then do the other part of the way. And so there was a lot of negotiation there. There was an intersection further down on Tualatin and Sherwood Road where due to the number of businesses and the type of businesses in the areas that we were unsuccessful in convincing anyone that we could keep those businesses whole and open cut across there. And on that one, we're going to have to go trenchless across there. Though the contractor thinks they know they have a way to do it, they think that they have a money saving proposition to allow us to open cut it. And so we're going to work with them and see if they can get those approvals, but we're not going to allow them to slow us down. Now on Shoals Ferry Road, going between Roy Rogers Road and up through Beaverton, I believe there are a number of intersections along there that we're going to open cut, and maybe a couple that we have to go trenchless. And it just gets into the type of traffic in the area, the type of businesses, just what's going on in there, in terms of whether it's in everyone's best interest to allow us to open cut through there, or if we have to go through the expense of going trenchless. Not to bore you, but one more a real good example that I can think of was it was a crazy busy area, Hall Boulevard. Mm-hmm. So where Shoals Ferry Road crosses Hall, The county really wanted us, the county and ODOT really wanted us to go trenchless. They didn't see any other way around it. And so what we had to do on that particular project was think through a trenchless activity, a trenchless project to get across there. And we showed them how much longer it would take and how much more impactful it would take in the areas that we have the sending and receiving pits. And so we'd be there a much longer period of time than if we could just open cut through it at night. And so that was a lot of work with them, figuring out all the details from that and ultimately getting approval from them to do open cut through that at night. And we got through that successfully.
Just a follow-up to that, Shoals Ferry is owned by the county, right? They're in charge of that. It's not Tigard. I know it's not Beaverton.
Correct. It is county. Yep.
Okay. And selfishly, what are the impacts going to be? Shoals Ferry is a big commuter road. Got a lot of folks coming in that cut through there to get to 217 and 5. Do you know when the timing of that is, just so I can keep an eye on it?
So you can know when to avoid it? So
no, not me personally, but maybe we can do some messaging or think about how we can let folks in the area know about it.
Oh yeah, well, certainly it's our responsibility as the Willamette Water Supply Program to do that messaging, to do the communications, to get in front of that, and to communicate to marry that up with Washington County and with Beaverton and Tigard of when we're going to be working through particular intersections and everything. The nicer thing about that, so to answer your question, is the contractor Emery is started on that work on the Roy Rogers end of Shoals Ferry. So they're starting on, and as far as I know, they're going to start to the west and work their way east. I'm sorry, yeah, that's right. Start on the west, work their way east. And so in terms of the timing, boy, it starts now, and I believe it's going to be about a two-year long project thereabouts, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. I invite anyone on my team that knows better to correct me if I'm wrong on that, but I think that's about right. Another thing that we do is we work very closely with the contractors to try to understand exactly when things are going to happen so we can communicate and follow through on our communications. So when we tell people we're going to be in a certain area, we're actually in a certain area at that time. And it's a challenging effort because contractors, sometimes they need to change or they want to change and they don't understand the ramifications of our communications and coordinations and everything. So it's something that takes a lot of work.
Yeah.
So the nice thing about Roy Rogers Road is that Shoals Ferry Road in that part of the world, it's wider than Shoals Ferry Road around Washington Square and kind of going up through like Red Tail Golf and Denny and Allen and everything. It's really narrow through there, really challenging. So we'll have better luck at maintaining open lanes for traffic and not impacting traffic, but it won't be without some impacts to traffic.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you for that.
Yeah, you're welcome. Okay, so I've got maybe one more slide on PLW 1.2. A couple more. So this shows the offloading of the last sticks of the 48-inch pipe to get across Johnson Street. So just again, a couple of excavators are required to lift these. These are about 50-foot long sticks of pipe, so it's a pretty significant effort for this operation, but something we're very well practiced at now. And I think the final photo here is just of more of that sound wall going up that Washington County is installing with the widening of Cornelius Pass Road. So that's it for PLW 1.2. Now we'll loop around the county clockwise to go over to MP 1.1 down Western Boulevard. And so this one, it's more of the buttoning up kind of work for now. Continuing to work on test stations, flow meter vault bypass piping, and air valve appurtenance piping. Continued installation of City of Beaverton 16-inch water main and Western Avenue is nearly complete. And along with that is city water service connections and tie-ins from 5th Street to the Beaverton Hillsdale Highway, so from 5th to north. And city stormwater paving and curb improvements are occurring along Western Avenue. So it's that area is still a big construction zone, but it's looking better and better every day. So I think a couple of photos here to show you some of that work the flow meter vault here, setting of a harness coupling of the 48 and a 48-inch butterfly valve in Western Avenue in that flow meter vault that I mentioned. And then the next photo shows a 30-inch butterfly valve being dropped into position. There it is. So that shows that, that valve being dropped in there. Yeah, more of that kind of work going on. So that's MPE 1.1. Now continuing on to MPE 1.2. So this is our pipeline project that I mentioned in Allen Boulevard and Shoals Ferry Road, crossing 217. So in this one, we're buttoning up the annual grout tunnel number one, lower Fannell Creek crossing. So that's the Fannell Creek crossing on the west side of 217. Our 16-inch City Beaverton waterline on Shoals Ferry Road, working on installation of that. And the waterline across Cascade, Shoals Ferry, Denny service transfers are being buttoned up. Continuing our 48-inch open-cut waterline on Shoals Ferry Road, going north up towards Denny Road. And a pressure and flow control facility, meter vault, and underground piping. That work is occurring out kind of at the intersection of Hall Boulevard and Oleson. I've got a couple of photos here for you. Here, showing the wax tape covering over the harness coupling. So these harness couplings here, shown here, it's a big, heavy piece of fabrication there, and allows for fit up and flexibility, and it's a lot of it's very important for the stability of the pipeline. But they're kind of big, messy sort of pieces of equipment there, and to keep them from corroding, they require wax tape couplings or wax tape coatings. And so that's what's occurring here. Is after everything is installed and the corrosion protection is installed, then it's covered with wax tape to prevent it from further corrosion or any corrosion, frankly. And then next up here is the foundation, or no, I guess I got one more. So this is actually installing the cathodic jumpers at a 48-inch and 12-inch bypass. So just the a view of some of the work taking place before any coatings are installed. And then the next photo is of the foundation of our pressure and flow control facility meter vault. So this is the bottom fitting there for the flow meter vault at our pressure and flow control facility. As I mentioned, out near, was John's Incredible Pizza, now it's going to be Hobby Lobby, but it's at the intersection of Hall Boulevard and Oleson. So that's it for the construction photos. The next part of this presentation, as I mentioned, will be a brief discussion about operational readiness. If we go to the next slide, what I anticipate doing in future board meetings, and certainly I think it's important to discuss with this board and to present to you not only how we're building everything, how we're getting everything done, but also how we're thinking through and getting ready to operate this infrastructure when we're actually done. And so there's four topics I'm going to be presenting to you over the time. I think each time I make a presentation to you, I'll focus on one of them. But the four topics are our WWSS operations plan development. So that's the overall plan for operating everything and what we're doing to prepare that. Our commissioning and startup planning, how we're actually, after we get everything built, how we're going to first start flowing water through it and making sure that everything is operating properly. Another thing that we're working on is water supply integration planning, that once we're done with commissioning and startup and we're starting to get ready to send water into the distribution systems, how do we know we're going to be successful at that? And then finally, WWSS related staffing. In order to do all of these things, we need people. This is a whole new operation for us, and we're going to need some staff in order to run all of this. So what are we doing to prepare this for staffing all of this? And so one more click. So the one I want to talk about today is what are we doing right now about the WWSS related staffing. So the next slide shows you an internal estimate that our team prepared for the staffing needed to run all of this new infrastructure. And this is really purely for operations, just for operating all of this. Regarding the operations side, 11 new people, maintenance for a specialized O&M, for admin support 8 and transmission and storage 5, for a total of 32. And so this was done after kind of a ground up estimate of everything that's going to take to operate and maintain and asset management and track and locates and everything related to operating the raw water facility, the water treatment plant, the pipelines, and so on, 32 people. And so when that estimate was prepared, there were some reactions that, how do we know that's the right number? And that seems like a lot of people. And is this really correct? And so the effort that we undertook, let's go to the next slide, is to get a third-party evaluation or third-party verification of this estimate. We wanted to really test ourselves to find out, is this really the right number of people, or should we have a different number? And so this is an effort that started last September and just ended back in where are we starting from? What's our level of service that we're expecting for this infrastructure? How do our estimates compare to our quote unquote comparables? And then also look at our organizational structure to come up with a new recommendation for our staffing plan. So the next slide shows you through this effort what we came up with for comparables. And so the consultant that we had on this, which they're Brown and Caldwell, they've done a number of these types of projects, came up with this list of comparables. So it's utilities that are operating similar sort of infrastructure that we're operating. So the list there is on the list of the utilities is on the left-hand side there, and their staffing, comparable staffing, is all the way over on the right-hand side. And in this particular chart, all we're looking at is just the treatment plant staffing. So at the bottom there, we're showing 19 people at the treatment plant. And you can see the numbers of total number of staff there, and they kind of like range all over the place, generally. But you can also look at it and go, well, 19 looks about right. I mean, it's kind of in the mix there. It's higher than some, lower than others, so maybe it's good. But what we found through this exercise is that just looking at comparables probably isn't enough, probably isn't good enough for us to make any real good decisions here. So the next thing we looked at, go ahead and go to the next slide, is we looked at our level of service. It's like, what is your standard of service that you're really aiming to achieve here? And what you find is that your level of service is really related to the number of people that you need in order to meet that. If you have a pretty low level of service, low expectations, you probably need fewer people. High level of service, you probably need more people. So we challenged ourselves to identify our level of service for all of the infrastructure, and we identified these 9 categories of levels of service. Just reading them off for you, it's water quality, water quantity resilience, water quantity reliability, financial resources, safety, organizational development, supervision, operation strategy, maintenance strategy. And then, oh, yes. Sure, Judah.
Dave, if I can ask, you have multiple times used the term we. So when you say we, who was it? Just the WWSS? Was it a management committee? I mean, who had these offsites and has done these seminars?
Great question. So, the we was pretty inclusive. We had participation broadly termed everyone from the operations committee and finance committees of all of the WWSS partners. And so on the operations side, we had folks from the Joint Water Commission. So primarily Chris and Zach were intimately involved in this work here. On TVWD side, it was Pete Boone and I believe Ryan and Nick and some others and Matt Oglesby. On the finance side, from Hillsboro, we had Lee. I think it was primarily Lee was a participant on this. On the TVWD side, it was primarily Paul and Justin. We also had participation from HR because we're talking about hiring all these people and everything like that. So it was a pretty broad group that we kind of like swooped into this net that we wanted to make sure that we had a lot of buy-in to where we were headed with this.
Excellent. Thank you.
You're welcome. So all these levels of service, we challenged all of these people like got together and figured out to see what are we trying to achieve by this, and how does it relate to staffing, and how does it relate to our comparables? And so I've got a few graphics that show you where we kind of landed with some of that, but just a few examples, because I've probably taken up too much time as it is in this meeting. But let's, the next slide up talks about maintenance strategy. And so if we look at the spectrum of where your level of service can be on maintenance strategy, on the left-hand side there, a lower maintenance strategy would be it's a reactive. So basically on the low end, you're basically waiting for things to break before you maintain them. And on the high end, it's preventative, is that you're preventing failures, you're preventing any sort of outages. And so you can see where we land. What our expected maintenance strategy is on the high side, is that we're aiming for a preventative maintenance strategy, which I believe is highly appropriate for us, given the huge investment into this infrastructure and also the criticality of this new water supply for our service areas. You see that generally most utilities land in that group, and then you see a couple that don't. And the simple reason that Batasso and Northeast Water Treatment Plant are in that lower group is primarily because they aren't sole sources of supply. For example, I believe it's the Northeast Water Treatment Plant, or it might be Batasso, I can't remember which, but I think it's Northeast, is one of five water supplies to the service area that it serves. And so if it were to be out of service for a period of time because of a maintenance problem, that's okay. They have four other water supplies that they can rely on. So they can get away with a lower service level on the maintenance strategy, where we want to aim on a higher side. Next one is water quality. So where do we land on water quality? And the spectrum here is on the low end is just meeting drinking water requirements, and on the high end is meeting stringent, greater than drinking water requirements, and also having intermediate controls in your processes, and you're anticipating a widely varying source water quality or raw water quality. And so you take all of these things in. Willamette isn't on the highest side. Well, we're not expecting to be on the highest side of this, but on a high side, certainly exceeding drinking water requirements, and we're going to have a lot of controls in between the processes in terms of our water quality. And the Willamette River is a fairly, at times, variable raw water quality source. And so it's going to lean on the higher side of staffing requirements. Batasso, kind of the outlier there is Batasso. It's like, why are they so high? Why are they so great? It's just part of their culture. At their water treatment plant, it's part of their culture to win awards on water quality and win awards on these sorts of things. And so they've just made it part of their culture, and that's why we have them on the highest end out there. But this gives you an example of kind of where we land on that spectrum. And I think the last example that I have for you is operation strategy. Where do we land on that? In this one, we land on the high side as well. And basically what we mean on operation strategy is that if the plant can run by itself, can be run remotely, doesn't need a lot of staffing, it's on the low side. If we're expecting to staff it 24/7 with operation staff, then it's going to end up on the higher side. And you can see most of the utilities end up on the higher side. But there's a couple of there, Northeast and Ned Bailey. They were set up for remote operations, and there are periods of time where they run remotely. There's no one at the water treatment plant. And given the complexity and criticality of our system, I would never recommend that. I think it's critical that we have staff at the water treatment plant at all time. So where does this bring us? I'm simplifying this greatly, but again, I don't want to take up any more time than I already have. So we challenged ourselves to ask a lot of tough questions, and who do we really need in 2026 when we're operating this? And what we found in comparison to the baseline, in comparison to the internally developed staffing list, we found that we were able to save about five positions. And essentially what we mean by that is I wouldn't say that these are 100% cut, we don't need them, but it's actually where we defined agreement amongst the broader we, as I was just explaining to Commissioner Judah's question, is let's start at a lower staffing level. Let's see if we can do okay with that. Let's save the money, frankly, from the staffing investment and learn as we go a little bit. And if we define that, wow, we really need these other positions we identified, then we can hire them in the later years as we gain operational experience. In the interim, to fill those needs, what we would recommend is contract services, contract staff. Is instead of having full-time equivalents where we hire them and they're part of staff forever, we would use contract services for a period of time. And so that's some of the details that we're still working through right now. We're still working through refining exactly the implementation of this, this new organizational charts and everything else like this. But I'm feeling good that we're making some good progress on this. We're having some difficult conversations and we're building alignment in terms of where we're headed with this. I'll pause on this for a second and see if you have any questions.
Any questions for Dave? I see head shaking. I don't see any hands raised. Dave, I guess my last comment is, do we assume that within these numbers are people who will also work in the TVWD offices as the managing agency to support this overall project?
So there's a few more positions added to that, the, in terms of the managing agency type efforts. So for example, like my position being the general manager of the WWSS Commission and the general manager of the WIF Commission isn't included on this list of folks. It would be a TVWD staff position that would continue on after the program. And so that would be an example of my position would be in addition to this list.
All right. So do you have any idea how many more folks that would be over the 27 and then how that compares to like agencies, as your other slides indicated?
Quick honest answer is no. A little bit more filled out answer is I'm guessing it's going to be on the order of a handful. And some of these positions may not be full-time FTEs. Some of these positions may be TVWD staff that have part of their job is managing agency work, and the other part of their job is TVWD work. And so that's why I don't have a solid answer for you, but it's exactly the things that we're working through right now.
All right. Thank you very much. I still don't see any other questions or hands raised, so.
I am then done with my general manager's report, finally.
All right. Excellent report.
Thank you.
What a project we're all involved in. If those pictures don't demonstrate it, I don't know. Okay. Next item today on our agenda is for public comment. Public comment time is set aside for persons wishing to address the board on items on the consent agenda and matters not on the agenda. Additional public comment will be invited on agenda items as they are presented. Annette, do we have any persons who would like to comment today?
No requests today.
All right, thank you. As a reminder, Annette is monitoring the chat feature for any future requests. Our next thing today is consent agenda. The consent agenda items are considered to be routine and may be enacted in one motion without separate discussion. Any board member may request that an item be removed by motion for discussion and separate action. Any items requested to be removed from the consent agenda for separate discussion will be considered immediately after the board has approved those items which do not require discussion. Today's consent agenda includes item A and B. A is the approval of the December 1st, 2022 meeting minutes, and B is accept the financial statements and report of independent auditor for the fiscal year ended on June 30, 2022. Do I have a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda as presented? And please remember to state your name prior to making the motion and a second for this action item.
This is Commissioner Duggan, so moved.
This is Commissioner Tibnon, second.
All right, thank you. We have a motion and a second. The board recorder will now conduct the voting roll call for the record.
All right, excuse me, City of Beaverton?
Yes.
City of Hillsborough?
Yes.
And TVWD?
Yes.
Thank you.
All right, the motion passes. Item four today will be moving into our business agenda items. First thing under there is the election officers for 2023. And Mr. Kraska will present the staff report.
All right, thank you again, Chair Judah. Good afternoon, commissioners, I'm back. So this is pretty simple. First meeting of the calendar year, our WWSS IGA requires us to elect officers. Last year, we agreed, the board concurred that during this dynamic time on the WWSS, it would be beneficial for officer positions to be held for 2 years. Commissioner Judah is the chair, and this is the end of his 2 years, and Commissioner Duggan is the vice chair, end of his 2 years as well. And so at this time, I leave it to the board to make make nominations of the, let's do nominations of the chair position first, and presumably it would be chair for the next 2 years to be revisited at this meeting next year. And then following that, then it would be nominations for vice chair position. So if I can answer any questions, I will, but otherwise I'll leave it in your hands.
This is Commissioner Judah. I'd like to nominate Commissioner Jim Duggan as the chair of the WWSS Board of Commissioners for calendar year 2023.
You need a second on that?
Yes.
Yeah? Okay. Enthusiastically second.
All right, we have a motion and a second. Let's see. I want to make sure I haven't left anything off the script. The recorder will now conduct the voting roll call for the record.
All right, thank you. City of Beaverton?
Yes.
City of Hillsboro?
Yes.
And TVWD?
I guess so, yes.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Congratulations, Jim. I think you're going to take this over. Here's my gavel. Here, I'll give you my pen instead.
It's like Thor's hammer. Okay, I'll assume the duties. Therefore, do I have a nomination for board vice chair? As a reminder, please remember to state your name prior to making the nomination.
I would like to nominate Dave Judah to serve as vice chair.
This is Commissioner Judah. I second.
I'll second that as okay. Well, or third that. Seeing that we have a motion and a second for Dave Judah to serve as board vice chair for the calendar year 2023, the board recorder will now conduct the voting roll call for the board.
All right. City of Beaverton?
Yes.
City of Hillsboro?
Yes.
And TVWD?
Yes.
Perfect. Thank you.
The motion passes. Next on our agenda is considering adoption of resolution number WWSS-01-23. Adopting the Willamette Water Supply System WWSS annual work plan and budget for the fiscal year 2023-24 and approving the Willamette Water Supply Program Capital Improvement Base Plan, otherwise known as Baseline 8.1. Mr. Carlson will now present the staff report.
Thank you, Chair Duggan. Thank you, Commissioners. Next slide, please. So, quick overview of the presentation this afternoon. We will preview the requested board action. We will review the baseline background and the process that we go through to develop that. Then we'll have a quick discussion about the contingency and management reserve items that are within the baseline, and then go into the details of baseline 8.1 itself, as well as the proposed 2024 WWSS annual work plan and budget. And then with a closing for consideration and comments, as well as requested board action. Next slide, please. The requested board action will be to consider adopting resolution number 0123, adopting the Willamette Water Supply System annual work plan and budget for the fiscal year 2023-2024, and approving the Willamette Water Supply Program Capital Improvement Plan, which is part of baseline 8.1. Thank you. So going to the background of the process for baseline, what is a baseline? Go ahead and click please. One more. Thank you. And so why do we adopt a baseline and when do we do that? So the baseline is essentially our plan for what we're going to execute on in terms of the projects that make up the WWSP. It consists of our master schedule telling us when and what activities are going to be occurring. It includes cost estimates, as well as a breakdown of the cost shares per each of the WWSS partners. The process is actually part of our governance structure, so it's embedded in the IGA in sections 5 and 8, as well as the interim financial procedures established as part of the IGA and the management authority matrix adopted by the WWSS. It's an annual process, so we go through it every year. We incorporate the most current information that we have, whether that be updated contract information or FISE estimates. At this stage, we're into contracting. And so we use it to plan our work, as I mentioned, and it establishes budgets for each of the partners for the fiscal year, as well as the agency itself. And it helps us detect and manage changes and variances throughout the year. It's also used to develop our risk analysis, and it's a tool for managing the risks, as well as developing reports for the board's partners, the WIFIA program, and the public at large. And then finally, all these outputs are used as inputs into the various partners' finances, used for forecasting efforts and budgeting as well. Next slide, please. So the process begins in the late fall, early winter each year, where we develop an initial draft. That draft is distributed to the partners. So on December 15th, we had an initial baseline 8.0 that was sent out to each of the partners' operating and finance committees for review. We then will review time and convene with those committees in early January for them to get an opportunity to evaluate any significant changes. At this stage of the program, we're under contract with most things, so that there wasn't a lot of material changes, but it still allows them the opportunity to review the plan. We have a final baseline revision process. So if there are any changes that occur between the time that the draft is released and the meetings with the various operating and finance committee members, it allows us to incorporate those changes. And so there were a few changes that we did incorporate between the initial draft and baseline 8.1. So they were rather immaterial, but because we had the opportunity to incorporate changes, even though they were minor, we took the opportunity to do so. And then that is then presented to the management committee for consideration to recommend to the board at the January 19th WWSS managing committee that took place on January 19th. And the management committee did recommend bringing baseline 8.1 and the annual work plan and budget forward to this body for consideration. And then that brings us to today, where the information is brought forward for your consideration and for adoption. Next slide, please. Go ahead and click through. One more, thank you. So the baseline consists of three main components, and I'll just kind of go from the bottom up, actually. So obviously there's the project cost. So the project costs consider are the actual design, project management efforts, the construction costs, the services that the design engineer provide during construction, as well as some project level contingency. And I'll talk a little bit more about that here in a minute. And then the middle section for system-wide costs is actually the things that apply to the entire program. So we're not able to attribute those things to a specific project. So we consider them system-wide. So things like program management work, the efforts that Dave puts in, and financial management, so controls and procurement, the things that my team work on, real estate acquisition, overall permitting and mitigation and outreach efforts. So those are some of the items that are in the system-wide budget. And then finally, management reserve. So the management reserve is a level of reserve that allows us to manage risks for the program, and it deals with the sort of the unknown unknowns that may come up throughout the process. And I'll go into a little more detail and provide some examples of what would consist of the use of management reserve. Next slide, please. So as I mentioned, talking about the difference between project contingency and management reserve, next slide. Go ahead and click through, please. So with management reserve, these things are designed essentially to incorporate program-wide level risks. So they're not intended to address contingency at the project level. We carry contingency at the project level, and that contingency number, as we go into the contracting phase, becomes narrower because we've cleared risks out of the way. We know what we're dealing with the project, but there's still things that occur on any project that will result in the use of contingency. And so we carry an appropriate level at the project level that allows either the contractor or generally staff level decisions within the management agency or the program to allow the use of contingency to address those issues as they come up. Whereas management reserve is held at the program level to address those unknown unknowns. And it gets evaluated against the known risks that we have, as well as other potential risks. And so that's carried to address things outside a specific project, and that involves further review and adoption within the program and this body as well. Next slide, please. So to provide some examples of the use of contingency, I'm not going to go through these in detail, but there's a few times where, for example, we're working on a project near a school that requires a change in the contract to accommodate nighttime hours so that we can address traffic control and children's safety during school hours. So that gets taken out of the contingency and then applied to the contract through that process, and we're able to execute that here within the program management office. Whereas management reserve is to deal with the increases in potential system-wide services, because those don't have a contingency level associated with them. Or as, for example, some of the significant project changes that we encountered, for example, with the raw water facility, GMP2, where the bid came in significantly higher than what was carried in the baseline for a probable construction cost. So we brought that forward to the managing the management committee as well as this board, and they allowed us to take a transfer from management reserve and go ahead and apply that at the project level. Next slide, please. So this provides us a little overview of where the amounts and where they're held for contingency versus management reserve. At the contingency level, currently we have for a pipeline $17.8 million, or 3% of construction costs held at the contingency level. And for facilities, we have $31.3 million, or 7%. Our facilities projects are obviously more complex. There's more risk associated with those things. So it's appropriate to maintain a higher level of contingency for those contracts as opposed to our pipelines, which tend to be a little more straightforward. Next slide, please. So the management reserve level for baseline 8.1 is $20.1 million less than it was in baseline 7. However, $15.7 million of that occurred during the period between baseline 7 and baseline 8. So these were changes that I alluded to in a prior slide that were incorporated as a result of construction packages coming back significantly higher than they were initially anticipated to, due to the macro level and bidding environment that they're dealing with today. The assumptions on the management reserve are actually in above the level of the risk analysis that we've conducted for baseline 8.1. So the $58.8 million is above what our current risk analysis has provided. We do recommend retaining the full management reserve at this time, given that we're still on the front side of a significant amount of construction work to occur. And so we anticipate that there may be things still that are not incorporated into our risk analysis. And so the $58.8 million is an appropriate level of MR at this time. Next slide, please. So let's talk about the details that incorporated into baseline 8.1. Next slide. So this is our single line schedule that provides an overview of what the program is doing and when. You can see fiscal year 24 is shaded in there. As we indicated earlier on, there's currently 14 active construction projects underway. Next slide, please. These are the projects that have been completed to date. So lots of primarily pipeline work that has occurred throughout the county. The raw water facility 1.0 project, the phase one and 1.5 work was completed. Dave went into the details of that during his manager's report. We still have ongoing work for that project, the phase two GMP, which is associated with the assets that are being constructed for the Willamette Water Supply System Commission. Next slide, please. And these are our 14 projects that are underway, so lots of work around the area. We are currently at a anticipated burn rate for this next fiscal year of about $1.6 million per workday. So there's no shortage of activity going on in terms of construction as well as management activities to support that. Next slide, please. To provide a comparison of baseline 8.1 to where we were this time last year with baseline 7, for the projects, we are at little over almost $1.2 billion in baseline 8.1, or an increase of $10.4 million, about 1%. For the ancillary projects, so these are the projects that the program is delivering on behalf of a specific partner. Those are the TVWD MPE project, as well as the City of Beaverton 1.0, COB 1.0 project. Those are anticipated to decrease about $1 million or 1%. For our system-wide costs, excluding the management reserve and real estate costs, we have an anticipated increase of $8.7 million. A lot of that is the result of us incorporating some capital costs associated with the treatment plant that were initially held outside the baseline. It was decided during the review process that those really needed to be incorporated so that the partners could plan appropriately for those costs. So we went ahead and incorporated those into the system-wide budget. They'll likely be part of they'll be separate assets associated with the water treatment plant, but they're now carried it within the baseline forecast. Our real estate costs are estimated to increase approximately $1.8 million. And then, as I indicated, all this results in a draw on our management reserve of a total of $20.1 million from a comparison of baseline 7. But the net program costs are the same as they were in baseline 7, and we anticipate that moving forward. Next slide, please. How that breaks down per partner. So it's anticipated Beaverton's change is approximately $0.5 million, or about 0.5%. Hillsborough's decreased by $1.2 million, and TVWD's decreased by $1.5. The WIF partners is an increase of $3.3 million. That's a little misleading, mainly because of the way our project partner model worked. The WIF partners project was not a separate project. It was actually part of another project. And the model didn't do a really good job of breaking those out. The budget for that project was actually about $15 million. So it was delivered below budget. And now that that project is substantially complete, we were able to incorporate the actual costs into the model, which gave us a better view for each partner moving forward. But it does reflect an increase as what was carried in baseline 7. And then, as I indicated, the total is the same moving forward between baseline 8.1 and 7. Next slide, please. So transitioning over to the work of what the team is doing in terms of the annual work plan. So this is not so much about managing the capital projects, but more some of the other things that Dave indicated that we're focusing on, such as system-wide startup and commissioning and water supply integration activities. So we'll continue to advance the program construction activities, the 14 projects that are underway, but we'll also be focusing on things like WIFIA compliance and other loan programs, as well as debt issuance for the partners if need be. We'll continue to manage the safety program and provide communications and outreach programs for the various projects and partners, as well as the development of financial procedures. So there's a effort underway with the Finance Committee for the WWSS, as well as the WIF, to develop long-term or permanent financial procedures. We'll complete or continue the acquisitions of real estate and the issuing of permits and land use approvals for our construction activities, and then planning the water supply integration, commissioning and startup, and ongoing operations once the program has begun to wrap up. Next slide, please. So the estimated materials and services budget for those activities, which include commission and operating expense, committee meetings, board meetings, locates, financial administration, plans development and property management, is estimated at $1.4 million. This does include staff estimates from the City of Hillsborough as well as TVWD. And then our capital outlay of $420.9 million for the construction projects associated with the program. I do want to point out that the $420 million is less than what the annual amount is for the baseline, because the MPE project and the WIF costs are actually not budgeted by the WWSS. They're directly budgeted by TVWD. Since they're the managing agency, they can appropriate those directly in their own budget process. And then $140,000 for contingency. Standard practice is to incorporate a 10% operating contingency of operating costs. So that's where the $140,000 comes to, totaling a $422,492,810 appropriations for fiscal year 24. Next slide, please. So I apologize. I have no neat pictures of construction activities to show you, but I did my best to be entertaining and informing, so I'm happy to address any questions you may have at this time.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions for Mr. Carlton?
Justin, this is Commissioner Judah. Real quick, can you remind me, and this was probably earlier and I just didn't capture it, the difference between the fiscal year and the calendar year?
Yes. So actually in Oregon, all governmental agencies operate on a fiscal year starting July 1st. So these appropriations will cover the period of July 2023 through June 30th of 2024.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Hearing none, do I have a motion and a second to adopt resolution number WWSS 01-23, adopting the Willamette Water Supply System Annual Work Plan and Budget for Fiscal Year 2023-24, and approving the Willamette Water Supply Program Capital Improvement Plan Baseline 8.1. Please remember to state your name prior to making the motion and second for this action item.
This is Commissioner Judah. I move to approve item 4B as written.
Commissioner Tivnan, I second.
The board recorder will now conduct the voting roll call for the board.
All right, City of Beaverton?
Yes.
City of Hillsborough?
Yes.
And TVWD?
Yes.
Thank you.
The motion passes. Next on our agenda is considering adopting resolution number WWSS 02-23, approving a change in the name of the recipient for a federally funded grant from the City of Hillsborough to the Willamette Water Supply System Commission. Mr. Carlton will present the staff report. Carlton, excuse me.
That's perfectly okay. Thank you, Commissioner, or Chair Duggan. So we did not prepare a slide for this presentation. This is really pretty straightforward. So the City of Hillsborough was able to obtain a grant through the EPA for $1 million for some of our treatment equipment associated at the treatment plant. During the grant application process, they had applied for this $1 million EPA grant under the City of Hillsborough water system. And as we got additional guidance from the EPA after the grant was awarded, they indicated that the grant recipient needed to be the owner of the asset, which is actually the WWSS Commission. So the advice that we got from the EPA was to have a process executed by them known as a technical correction, and they recommended that the City of Hillsborough through the Utilities Commission and the WWSS Board each adopt a resolution stating that the recipient of the grant would be the WWSS. And so this is simply executing that resolution to process that technical correction through the EPA.
Thank you for that background. Are there any questions for Mr. Carlton? Seeing none, do I have a motion and a second to adopt resolution WWSS 02-23, approving a change in the name of the recipient for the federally funded grant from the City of Hillsborough to the Willamette Water Supply System Commission? Please remember to state your name prior to making the motion and second for this action item.
Is Commissioner Tivnan so moved?
It's Commissioner Judah, second.
Being moved and seconded, the board recorder will now conduct the voting roll call for the board.
All right, City of Beaverton?
Yes.
City of Hillsborough?
Yes.
And TVWD?
Yes.
Thank you.
The motion passes. Next on our agenda, our informational items. Ms. Bennett will present a staff report on business agenda items planned for the April WWSS Commission Board meeting.
Thank you, Commissioners. There is one anticipated action item for our next meeting, and it is a natural hazard mitigation plan. Washington County's Emergency Management Division develops and leads updates to the countywide multi-agency natural hazards mitigation plan. During the current update cycle, staff have participated in the development of documentation that incorporates the Willamette Water Supply System into the plan. It's in the TWD portion or annex of the county's overall plan. With the board approved annex in the county's plan, we are eligible to apply for federal funding to assist with implementation of the hazard mitigation actions that are included in the plan. For the Willamette Water Supply, those include seismic sensor enhancements, expanded backup power capacity, and additional spare parts with a storage facility. Also included in the WWSS annex are specific regional transportation system improvements that would improve our and regional recovery after a natural disaster. So at the April board meeting, we plan to present the proposed annex document with a recommendation to the board for its approval. And that is all of our upcoming action items for April that we know at this time. May I answer any questions?
Seeing no questions.
Thank you
so much for that preview. Second informational item is just a reminder that the next regular board meeting is scheduled for April 6, 2023 at noon via Microsoft Teams. Last on our agenda, communication and non-agenda items, and there are no communications or non-agenda items scheduled for today's meeting. With that, I think we are ready for adjournment, unless I hear from staff or my fellow commissioners if they have any additional items. Great. Well, I'd like to wish everyone a remainder of Groundhog's Day being a festive one, looking at our shadows and thinking that we might have another 6 weeks of winter if you believe the legend. So therefore, this meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, sir. And-